105 DGS on KMOX. We have Ricky Horton coming up in a few minutes.
Do you want me to take that one?
Can you do that?
Yeah, if you can handle Rick, that'd
be
great.
So, Ricky.
He'd love it. Uh-huh. Crystal Quaid, you can handle her as well. She's running for governor. Think Tank coming up with Ian Mackey and Gene Evans, and a celebrity guest that Ian's bringing along with him. So, yeah. Want to do some of your shenanigans?
Yeah, I have some trash. But I also, did you guys watch the Emmys at all?
No.
Or talk about it? No.
Nope.
So, well, I want to talk about the shows and stuff that were up. Well, more about TV. But I also, and I don't know if this is just standing out to me for some reason. I don't know really what my point is, which is a great way to start a conversation. But Dan and Eugene Levy were the host. Mm-hmm. And it's such a specific kind of comedy now. It's just standing out to me like, those two, Bill Maher, it's just the, you know, the standard setup joke, which I like. It's fine. It just, it seems so old school to me now, but I just need to know what I'm in for, like what I'm watching, and then I'm fine and I'm cool and I can laugh and I get it. It's more like putting on a skit rather than doing comedy, because comedy to me now is more storytelling. Mm-hmm. So their kind of comedy is just really standing out to me. I don't know if you guys notice that too with the comedians. Like, I think more and more are going to the storytelling rather than the, you know, the punchline, the setup, the punchline.
Which makes the old school stuff really stand out.
Yeah, really stands out. But I'm wondering, like, too, if when, you know, Chris Rock and Adam Sandler and even Dave Chappelle started, and Don Rickles was still around doing his kind of comedy, which I got and I thought was funny too, but it was so different that, I don't know. You know, it's kitschy. It's the skit. And they were good. They were fine. You know, I would love to watch them host something else, but it just, it really stood out to me.
You think it's age, generational?
Whether I think it's funny or not, or whether they're doing
what they're doing.
Well, Dan's pretty young. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's probably about...
He's 40s. In his 20s, yeah. I think.
Dan Levy? There's no way.
You don't think?
Mm-mm.
Okay,
I think he's
30s?
Like 40, 45 maybe?
Seriously?
He's 41.
Oh my God, I thought he was in his 20s. He looks great. Anyway, back to your question. I don't know. I don't know if younger people think that's funny. And I wonder if we do just because we have one foot in and one foot out. You know, we have one foot in each of them. I don't know if younger people find that kind of humor amusing.
It's a good way to put it. Can you do your thing you did for me the other day about how television is failing us?
Well, this is the second part of this because, so Shogun wins for drama, Hacks wins for HBO, or Max, whatever. It is now, which Gene Smart, who actually won the award, made that joke. I used to be so on top of all these shows, and I am just so tired of getting every single streaming service. It's like, name one thing we've made difficult. It's TV. We had the bundle. It was cable. And now I think the streaming apps all got popular, right, because of the binge watching, because they would drop. Isn't that the draw? Or
I think
wasn't that the draw at first?
Mm-hmm.
And now they're letting them out, some of them, week by week. So it's basically, you're just another TV network. And now, you know, aren't you tired of getting a app just to watch one show and then you have to cancel it and then you have to get another one? So I just like gave up. It's like the ones I have now, I have. And so,
so like your point, which I think is really smart, is we've gone from cable to not cable to cable. We basically now just have a super cable made up of all these different.
They're all on their own.
Yes.
So
yeah,
what's
but
the
I don't
next
have like the shopping channel and QVC, and I only have things that I choose to have.
Wait, what do you have? Do you use YouTube TV or what do you
no,
use?
No, so we have the Hulu, Disney, ESPN thing. So that's kind of like live TV, some, you know, the sports and the Disney thing, which is movies and all that stuff. And I think we do Max, the HBO one, and
so, you know,
we have Prime because we have the Prime membership, and I think we have Apple Plus. But like, we change them though. Like, we'll turn some of them off when we don't have any shows.
Isn't that annoying? Like, I'm tired of canceling.
Yeah, I don't have to do that.
But I think the next iteration of this is going to be a bundle. It's going to be cable again. They're going to find, somebody's going to find a way to bundle these all together, or they're doing it now. Like,
oh
Hulu,
yeah, they do.
Disney,
yeah,
like
yeah,
three
yeah.
of them are bundling oh, yeah. together. So we took it apart, and now we're slowly putting it back together again. And it's going to be the same thing when it all comes out in the wash.
Well, it'll be streaming instead of a physical, you know. like a cable plugged into the wall or your satellite dish on top of your TV, on top of your screen.
Well, yeah, but I mean, the way you get it, it's not my point. It's the way it's, you know, the way you're watching it. Yeah. I guess,
do you think we will see a round three now where it's like another new thing where it's, again, trying to undercut? Because, as you said, we're basically paying as much for all the streaming stuff altogether as we would have just paying for cable, you know, 5-10 years ago. I wonder if there's going to be the new thing, a alternative even to cable cutting and cord cutting that could that will try and undercut and be much cheaper.
I think it's interesting because humans are creative enough and motivated by money enough that we come up with all of these ingenious ways to do the same thing. And we're coming up with all these ways to entice each other into buying content. When really, whether you're going back to Milton Berle or Carol Burnett or the old Batman or 2024, we're just human beings who are consuming content. And I think there's an argument, I made this before, that there's too much content. You guys won't remember this because you weren't on the show. None of you were. But there was a guy on once who wrote a book called The Something of Choice. Anyway, too much choice is bad. And he is a social scientist. And he said, like, you go to the grocery store and you're looking for wishbone dressing. And there are three different kinds. Great. America's fantastic. But if there's 40 different kinds of Italian dressing alone, you just have analysis paralysis. And the same.
Which there is, by the way.
Which there is.
Yeah.
And so now it's pretty much every single thing that you could want to consume, either literally or figuratively. I think they've made it far too difficult, far too complicated. I can't tell you the last time I watched a movie or a show because there are too many.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it is.
It's overload.
Well, so I'm trying to put this in the right way because if you just go back to like the model of cable or satellite and that's all there is. Well, Amazon was not on any of those. It was not a channel. It's its own app. It's its own service. And Apple is its own thing. And Netflix was its own thing. So you would be paying, like, even if I'm paying the same now, which I'm not, by the way, I spent a lot less money on what we do streaming than we did on DirecTV. We spent way more on satellite. But even if it was the same, for the same, I'm getting basically 5 or 6 places that create brand new high-quality content. Big-time TV shows, big-time movies, and things along. So I'm getting way more for the same amount of money.
But what I'm saying, and maybe we're saying, I got really confused. Sorry about what you were saying. But what I'm saying is, just like when I had cable and I wanted HBO or I wanted Showtime or I wanted Cinemax, I would be more apt to do that. Like, give me one thing and then I can pick and choose what I want out of that one thing. You could call and add HBO or add Showtime any way you want it. Why can't I have one central place? And yeah, if I want Netflix for this month, I have Netflix without signing up, getting a password, giving them my credit card. You know what I'm saying?
But you had to do that with cable anyway. You had to call them and say, I want this, I want HBO now, or I want to cancel Showtime, or whatever. You had to do the same thing.
But you didn't have to go through the whole payment process again in a new password.
No, you would still have your billing, but you would have to go through that step.
Well, forget the steps. I'm just saying, in the same place, if they were all together, and I could just click a button and, you know, this one's added, this one's not. I honestly think it's going to go back that way. I don't think it's going to stay the way it is. There has to be the next iteration of whatever we're doing, and I think it's going to be bigger bundles. Because what else is there? Having 50 more apps? But based on what you said and all the content, just one more question. Do you think everyone makes a movie thinking it's going to win an Oscar or a TV show thinking it's going to win an Emmy? Or do you think they know, oh, this is just the money grab? I'm just making this movie.
Yeah.
I don't have high hopes for it. Or do you think everyone has the intent of being the best?
No, I think it's the second thing you said. I think that people have never been more realistic with what they're making, how they're making it, what they're making it for, who they're making it for.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it is also a means to an end, right? I have seen actors say, they do the big blockbusters to make enough money so they can then do the indies that they really want to do because you don't get paid for those. I mean, like, that makes sense to me. And I bet the production companies, the directors, producers, they're all doing the same thing. You kind of have to. You have to churn out content so that you have something to constantly sell, so that you have the funds to go out and make the big blockbuster that you want to make.
Okay, well, let me take another approach. Is entertainment ruining our real lives?
Not me.
No. And not mine, but I could see where it... Some.
Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, I'm not expecting us to go back to ancient Greece and just walk around our hands behind our back philosophizing. But we don't do a lot of high-level thinking when we're watching television and playing video games and watching sports.
I don't think normies ever did that before. I think Socrates did it. I think 99% of the people were out manual laboring and not doing those things.
No, I disagree. I think you're selling people short. I think we've always done it in our own ways. And a person who's not formally educated may not have done it in quite the way that an educated person did. But I think we've always had our internal lives. And I think we've always had the things that we thought were important to us and our experience of our life. And I just think that we've never been more distracted. And we've kind of not just given in, but kind of given up. Mm-hmm. Like this is what life is. Life is entertainment. Whether it's watching my next door neighbor do the dance on TikTok, or it's watching a big star do a big blockbuster, or it's this or it's that. Just speaking for myself, like when I go home, if I don't turn on a screen, it's just quiet.
Well, that I was going to ask you if you were making a distinction between TikTok, social media, movies, TV. I don't think movies, TV sucks as much time out of your life as TikTok and social media does. I think it's two different
things. But it used to. What did all of our parents' generation do every night after work?
Yeah, watch
hours
TV.
And hours of watching TV.
But they watch TV with the family.
Yeah, I mean, you can watch. I can read my phone sitting next to you. We're not talking. If you're watching a screen in a movie, you're not talking to each other.
Yeah, but you're watching the same thing, and you have things to discuss. You know what I'm saying? Like. You like, oh, did you like that show? What did you think about that plot? What about Johnny Carson's guest? I mean, like, if you're watching your screen and I'm watching my screen,
right, but then I send you the video that made me laugh and we're sharing this. Look at this. Guess what I saw?
But I do think it's different.
Yeah. It is different. It always changes, but every generation thinks that same thing that we're talking about.
Yeah, but Kev, you always go with that argument and it's not always right. Every generation is different. And what Trish is saying is correct, that entertainment used to be a jumping off point for families. It used to be that everyone at work saw the show last night and everyone at the water cooler discussed what had just happened, or Walter Cronkite or whatever it happens to be. Now it's so far flung that the chances, if we go out to the kitchen right now and we say, like, did anyone see the show I saw last night?
No.
Chances are no.
Because you're watching something on Hulu and I'm watching something on Netflix. You know what I mean?
I do, but I mean, I also, it turns into different conversations.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I talk to people all the time. Like, as an example, we don't watch all the same shows, but Michael Calhoun and I have exchanged shows, and now I've watched things that he recommended, and he's watching things that I've recommended, and you're learning more, and now you have a different... I mean, I just think it's different. We always think of different as... Like, the only constant thing with humans is that we are always changing, like, from generation to generation.
Be careful in drive-thrus, because people are beginning to hitchhike in McDonald's drive-thrus.
Mm-hmm.
They're beginning to hitchhike to them or through them?
Through them.
So just walking through.
A ride with you and seeing if you'll get them something at McDonald's.
Yeah.
Because they don't have a car.
I've seen that a few times.
So what do they do?
Is it like asking someone to get alcohol? I'm really confused.
No,
like,
it's just panhandling. It's just...
They hang out
in the drive-thru. Yeah, they'll hang out in the drive-thru and they'll, you know, come up and knock on your window or whatever.
Hey,
and then
they'll
be
something?
Like, will you give me some cheeseburgers? And then... You go, no, I'm not going to get you any cheeseburgers. And they go, come on. And then you go, I'm not going to get you any cheeseburgers. Try the guy behind me.
It's going to go on this fake argument.
This has happened. This happened like a week ago.
I would rather buy someone a hamburger than hand them $5. And
that's a good point.
For real.
I prefer that too.
Yeah.
Like downstairs, I've done the thing where I'll get you a pizza or I'll get you some KFC rather than give you cash.
Because
I know the food will help you.
Exactly. And I don't want to get on I know, because we always do. Every single highway exit ramp, I don't care what county you're in this area, there is someone at the end of the ramp asking for money. From Kirkwood to South County to the city. Every single one. And I would much rather do that. Are you mad about it? The hitchhiking through the drive-thru?
No, I agree. I'd rather buy food.
Yeah.
The last time I did, though, at KFC, the guy bought a $40 lunch.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Was that the time that you guys got in trouble?
No,
it was the time after that.
So, oh, okay.
So you got like a mega bucket.
So somebody was outside and you're like, come on, I'll buy you lunch.
Yeah.
You get to the thing.
Yeah.
And he orders $40 worth of
food. Wow.
Yeah.
He got like the family bucket for seven.
Yeah, he did.
Damn.
It was stealthy.
He got you.
Man.
He got you. It's like, man, how much chicken are you going to eat today?
Yeah. The guy before that sucked on my neck.
Oh, my God.
You remember that?
No. Yeah.
You remember that?
No.
Yeah, Rach and I were out there, and some guy came up, and he was especially inebriated or high or something, shirtless, kind of an older guy, and he's like, hey, man, blah, blah, blah. And so I had a 20 on me, so I gave him a 20. And I'm not sure whether he was so happy or felt like he owed me a favor or something, but he went to give me a hug, and I didn't want to be the kind of person who's like, I don't hug homeless people. Uh-huh. So I hugged him, and next thing I know, he's like sucking on my neck.
Giving you a hickey.
Yeah.
What in the world?
Yeah, so I shoved him away, and I turned around, and Rach just looked like someone poured ice water on her.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I think I would have remembered that.
It was, I mean, we're laughing about it, and I would never want to say, like, I know what it's like to be sexually assaulted. I know what it's like to be assaulted. I know what it's like to have someone
some
unwanted.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
I totally understand what you're saying.
It was really, really troubling.
Yeah, it was off-putting.
Yeah. Didn't go for a walk for a while.
Yeah.
That'll
Didn't
do
offer
it.
To buy anybody lunch.
Didn't give anybody a 20.
Man.
Oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Stairway to Kevin.
Sure. What do you guys want to do? Anything you want to do? A sportsy thing? You want to do something? I don't have anything really serious. Actually, you know what? I know what I want to bring up because you mentioned this I think yesterday when we were talking about social media, this topic comes up. But did you guys see Australia banned social media for anybody under 18? So if you're not 18, you cannot have social media accounts in Australia. One, how does that hit you? Because we have age restrictions for a lot of things. We have shown that. That precedent exists. You've got to be 16 to drive, 18 to vote, 21 to drink. Does this fall into that same category of things that we need to monitor? Because I think there's a really good argument that it does.
Yes, I think it's a wholly wonderful thing for Australia. I think that they have taken over and done the difficult job that parents refuse to do, myself included.
Yeah. And I think it's, I mean, it's not going to prevent it. Like, we have to be honest. Like, people are going to get around it. They're going to find ways to have sign up with fake, you know, information, or parents are going to do it because they're going to get pressure from their kids. But it's an interesting idea. And I don't know if 18 is the right number. Maybe 15 is the right number. Maybe 16 is the right number. You know, we didn't let our daughter have a smartphone or get on until she was 13. But that was also 14 years ago. Right. So it was different 14 years ago, right? It is not the same now. Now it is much more common for people to have smartphones when you're what, 9, 8, 9, 10, 11, for a number of reasons. I mean, you know, my niece is around then. I think she has one. She's turned 11. She's got a phone. I don't think she has accounts, but that doesn't mean you can't access social media stuff. But the point is that, like, we do this anyway. And we do it because the idea of these laws is that it's better for everyone, right? You can say that. I think you're right, Dave, in the sense that it's stepping in where parents wouldn't. And maybe that's necessary sometimes.
Well, because
for there to be a bad guy that doesn't live right in the house and that's going to have to wear all of the anger every day versus the overall mental health. Because we know that the reason you have to be a certain age to drive is because we don't think you're responsible enough before that and you could hurt other people, right? And hurt yourself. Same thing for alcohol. You're not allowed to drink in the United States until you're 21 for those reasons. Is that not the same logic?
Same reasons could apply. I don't think we still know the repercussions of people growing up in the age of social media. It's too new still. And just all of the bullying that happens and obviously the suicides that stem from people being bullied on social media and the things that people want, their goals that kids have now because of social media that weren't around then. Like everybody wants to be influencers. Everybody wants to do this. Everybody wants to do that. Like just because you're seeing it on social media. The dumb tricks people try on TikTok or the things they eat or the
right
things they wash their face with. I mean, it's just insane. There's no control. The cat's out of the bag. No way to put it back in. And this is just one of the ways
right
to control it.
But the counter is that it's essentially the nanny state, right? I mean, here is the government stepping in and taking care of something that could be taken care of inside the home. But that, again, that logic applies to driving, to voting. There are 18-year-olds that are fully engaged and know what's going on in the world and they pay attention and they can vote. There are 18-year-olds that don't know anything, who don't pay attention to anything, and they also can vote. Right? We cannot account for all of this. I'm not sure if I would want the United States government to pass that law, but I don't think it's illogical. I think there is a good, solid logic to it. Are we better off doing it? And are we better off having somebody essentially, again, be the bad cop?
Well, think about it. We don't
take the tension out of the home.
We don't not pass laws because we think people will do it themselves.
Right, right. Exactly. I mean, like, as an example, my dad trained me to drive more than what was required. Right? He was more strict on it. I needed to learn things in more detail than I did in driver's ed. That doesn't mean that's the normal. That doesn't mean that applies to everybody. And I knew those things. He was teaching me when I was 14 years old, 15 years old, because he thought learning them early and maybe driving in a parking lot or whatever would help you become more comfortable when the time comes when you're 16 years old. But that's not what everybody did. And it's certainly, I mean, here in Missouri, you don't have to go to driver's ed. You're 16, go get your license. Mm-hmm. You could go out there. It's up to mom and dad to do it. I don't know if that's necessarily good or bad, but at least with that, people do need to go places, right? Like parents don't want to be tethered to their 18-year-old kid or their 17-year-old kid. There's a purpose to going places. Go to school, go to football practice, go to your job if you're a teenager. But social media is none of those things. It is not necessary. I mean, again, I'm the guy that argues that we shouldn't be shutting down TikTok because it's eyewash. It's all it is. It's just we're going to pretend that we're doing something important because we don't want to do things that are actually going to matter. But I think that there's a really smart logic to this. There are all kinds of things you can't do until you reach a certain age. What makes this different? Except that it already exists.
Mm-hmm.
Except that you already have millions of teenagers that already have it. But that doesn't mean you can't fix that or change that. Are you surprised that this is the other angle I wanted to get into? Like, and I know the arguments are like a country like Australia is a lot smaller than the U.S., which means it's a lot easier to create consensus, right? If you take some of the, Finland, Sweden, they have consensus because they're smaller populations. It's easier for smaller populations to agree. We have a wider range of views, a wider range of people because we have more people. The math just suggests you're going to have that. It's probably harder to do here. But are you surprised that that's not more common? That more places haven't gone the route that Australia just went?
No, because it's so very difficult for so many different reasons. But maybe if the experiment in Australia works well, then maybe people will wake up and they'll do it.
What's the real, solid, legitimate argument against doing it?
Right. And sorry, I was...
Go ahead.
I just don't get everybody's like, I don't need the country to make a law for me. Well, if it's doing... obviously laws were made in the past and something had to have happened probably for that law to be made. If it's something that could be for good, like you said, what is the big thing against it other than I don't want the country telling me or the government telling me what I should do? Is there any other logical reason to not do that?
To not outlaw it?
Right.
Like, is there a rational argument, like a factual, logical argument that says, you know what, that's not a great idea. That's an overstep. It's not necessary.
And I'm sorry, I know it's very confusing, but what I was saying, in the past when a law was made, something bad probably happened to have that law made. Isn't this stuff, this yeah. bad stuff happening? Couldn't that just be the reason?
Yes, I think so. But I think what goes against it is that a ton of people are having a ton of fun and making a ton of money. And the scary stories can be marginalized. Like, oh, well, they probably had problems to begin with X, Y, Z. Mm-hmm. So it's not like limiting smoking or driving under 16 or something like that. It's taking something that people already have. That the younger you are, the more you love it, the more obsessed with it you are, and then just pulling it out from under them. I've seen enough to be convinced that social media is bad for everyone, and especially for young people. And if the United States banned it, I would quietly celebrate.
You know, you just hit on one of the reasons why it won't happen here, though. Because so many of those big companies that make money off of that will not let it happen.
Yeah.
Our conversation with Ricky Horton is brought to you by Goodwill. Give hope, give local, give Goodwill.
Welcome back, guys. Time to talk to our pal Rick. Hello, Rick.
Hey, Dave. How are you today?
So it's always fun to beat Paul Skeens. That was worth the price of admission.
Oh, man. I mean, it was fun to watch him pitch. Let's start with that. I mean, he really is a talented guy. And if you're a fan of baseball, you had to love that. I mean, this guy's crazy good at the age of 22, but even better to beat a guy that's crazy good, and Andre Pallante was actually a little bit better.
Yeah, Rick, talk about the changes, right? I mean, we know the story. He got sent down early in the year when he was working in the pen and did not have any real answers for right-handed hitters. And there's a great story about this. Derek Gould wrote in the Post-Dispatch today detailing it, but we're seeing it play out. He made some changes. He created some weapons for himself, and he thought the only way he could do that would be to start in the minors, even if he was going to relieve when he came back, because you need the reps, you need the pitches to work on it. And it turns out now he's a valuable member of the rotation from doing that.
Well, I mean, it's a classic example of a guy taking a step back so he could take two steps forward, and that's what he did. Danny Cox did that early in his career, and I'm going in the way back machine now, talk about Danny, but he did exactly that, came back and was better. And now different things that Danny was working on than Pallante was. Pallante was working on getting right-handed hitters out, number one. I think that he's done something to disguise his curveball more, because I used to be able to tell from the booth when he was throwing it. Oh. I can't tell anymore. So I think that's something that I've seen. I don't know if hitters have seen it, but his curveball's better. But he's also got more of that, hey, things are going bad. I don't care. I'm getting you out mentality on the mound. I think he's realized that he needs to kind of not let things spin out of control, too. And he's definitely worked on his mound presence.
You know, that is one of the things that we talk a lot about when we discuss pitching labs and what pitchers do there. It's what you just described, Rick, is trying to make pitches look alike so you can't tell the difference. So a breaking ball, some of them they pop, right? You could see it right out of hand because it comes up and it looks like it's coming up, even though it's not really. It's an optical illusion, but it looks like it. And then the fastball will look different. But what they're doing now and what it sounds like Pallante has done is you make them look more the same.
Yeah, so the pitching labs are telling us that, and that's exactly right. And then the phrase, of course, is tunneling.
Right.
Everything's got to come out of the same spot. Otherwise, the hitter's going to see your hand's different, your wrist is different, the height of your arm is different, you're closed, you're open, you're leaning back, all those things. If anything's different, they're going to see it. Now, you know, even before the labs, the best of hitters could see that and say it without actually having a word for it. And like I said, I could see Pallante just from watching pitchers my whole life, but I could see that he was doing something different. And, you know, if I could see it, I'm sure watching it. But that's been, you know, one of several adjustments he's made, and it was really fun to watch him pitch yesterday.
Remind me, was the whole Contreras debacle the beginning of this season?
Last year.
Or last year?
Yeah, that was last year. Yeah.
Time flies.
Yeah, no, Well, it does fly. And this year, you know, it's kind of weird because he's not – we haven't talked about Contreras a lot this year because, for two reasons. One is, you know, Herrera's hit when he's played, and Pajes has done everything in catching. And I mean, so it's kind of like it's not as glaring a thing because those guys have done a good job filling in for him. But it's also because he's been hurt twice. And, you know, oddly, Contreras, Dave, says it's his most healthy year he's ever had as a catcher, except for the fact that he broke two bones. So I mean, but I get that. What he's saying is, you know, not the nicks and the bruises and the, you know, the headaches and the or whatever the catchers get, the foul ball off his foot, you know, that gives him a bad bruise. None of that stuff, just the broken bones. But we just haven't seen Wilson a lot. That, of course, has been a big miss.
He, you know, when you think about, I know we've talked a lot, Rick, about what's gone wrong on the offense. We know runners in scoring positions been a problem. That's going to be a problem when your middle of the order guys have struggled, or like, I mean, look, Contreras is a middle of the order guy and he's missed half the year. So when you take that into consideration, it does really make you understand the difference, right? The difference between being 5 to 8 games better is really the middle of the order health in Contreras's case. And, you know, the other guys just not being what they normally would be.
Yeah, John Mozeliak actually said that at an event of this week. He just said, look, you know, you always kind of plan in a little regression. You plan guys to have bad years, but we did not plan that. We did not plan that the middle of the order would not dominate. Ollie said it several times, too. Like, look, we were built to we wanted to get pitching that could compete, older guys that could kind of lead in the clubhouse, and I think they have done that. I mean, you have starters, you know, they have a 3.8 ERA, whatever they all have, which is fine if you're hitting, you know, 5 home runs a game and you know, driving a lot of runs. And I think that's what they thought the offense would do. That's been a big surprise for everybody, including the guys in the lineup. I mean, they thought they were going to be better coming out of spring training. It just didn't happen.
So think about it this way. We have enough good guys on our team, young guys, that we could bring them all back, take another shot at this, and probably do better than we've done the last couple years. But then again, and there's no guarantee that if you make wholesale changes and you go out and you buy a couple of starting pitchers, that that's going to be the cure-all either. I mean, they really are between a rock and a hard place here.
Yeah.
What's the worst-case scenario to you guys if we're a month into the season next year and we're kind of back where we are now?
Yeah, I think the worst-case scenario is that the fans' reaction to what they've seen. I mean, the fans are expecting the Cardinals to win. And if you have the same thing and you have the same result, you're going to get, I think, more apathy and more anger from fans than we've been experiencing this year. And that's been real. There's no question about that. That's been real, the fans' reaction to this team. And I would say almost unprecedented in my 40 years of being around baseball. A lot of times the Cardinals have not won, but you haven't had that kind of fan reaction for whatever reason. So it's been real. And so I think that the Cardinals are at a crossroads right now. They either say, you know, and again, dollars and cents are going to be a part of this, guys, because, you know, the TV uncertainty and you know, you may not be able to depend on having 3.4 million people come through the turnstiles. In fact, you can't. So, you know, that would be a nice thing, but, you know, that's not kind of in the forecast right now. So, you know, paring back seems to be a better economic thing to do. But, you know, we'll see how they end up going. But it's definitely business as usual probably is not going to happen.
All right, buddy. Have a great game. We'll talk to you Thursday.
All right. Thanks, guys.